Gig Gab, the show for working musicians, episode 315 for Monday, August 16th, 2021. Folks, and welcome to Gig Gab, the show by, for, and about working musicians here, back here in Durham, New Hampshire. I'm Dave Hamilton.
Here, fresh off a vacation in Kona, Hawaii, but now I'm in Napomo, California. It's Paul Kent.
Very nice, man. Going to Hawaii. I like it. How
it was nice.
Did you have a nice time? Yeah, I could see from your pictures that that you were not hating your life there. That's good.
It was very good. There's a lot of music, actually. You know, even the smallest coffee shops have these really wonderful guitar players, beautiful voices.
That's,
you know,
cool.
And not like people from the mainland who go over there to, you know, semi-retire or something like that, but like local talent that, you know, there's just not a gazillion high-profile places to play, and they're, you know, really wonderful talent. Breakfast places, coffee shops, you know, just solo guys. It's cool.
In the long-standing tradition of Don Ho, maybe.
Yeah, that would be different. That would be like a resort type of singer. But I'm even at like local hangout places.
Yeah,
you know, I was hearing beautiful music.
That's great. That's awesome. I had it on our agenda that I saw 7 bands in 8 days. I think that's incorrect. I think I saw a lot more than that. Now that I'm looking at it, we were down in Nashville. I went down. The stars aligned such that Podcast Movement, the annual conference, one of the annual conferences for the podcasting industry, was happening in Nashville that week, which was 2 weeks ago. I was the first one to go away. Then Paul went away. We should have talked about coordinating our trips, you know, so that we didn't.
I would just
miss
pause
2 weeks.
You a second and say, if you only saw 7 bands in 8 days in Nashville, you did it wrong.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's way more than that. Yeah, we were down in Nashville for that, and then Phish's rescheduled tour dates for Nashville were literally the exact same time as Podcast Movement. So that worked out, and we had plans and went to see those. But it started before we even left. We went and saw the North Mississippi All-Stars here. They played at the Stone Church, which is just down the street from my house. And I've never seen them north of the Mason-Dixon line. So I was really excited to go see them. And then we saw another band here the night before we left. We got to Nashville. We were supposed to see, we sort of made last minute plans to see Garth Brooks at the Nissan Stadium or something down there in Nashville. There were tickets available. My wife's always wanted to see Garth Brooks. And so we thought, well, what better place to see Garth Brooks than Nashville? Because you never know who he's going to bring out with him, right? You know, all of his friends live right there. And
they all have bars named after them.
And they all have bars named after them. That's true. That's right. They licensed their name to open for somebody else to open a bar. But that's true. And so we, you know, it was the day we arrived, but the scheduling all worked out. It was like a 15-minute walk from our Airbnb or whatever. So we, you know, we get to the stadium or whatever. And we'd heard that 2 days before they announced that it was the Grand Ole Opry that would be opening for Garth. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. I still don't know what that means because that's a variety show, right?
Like, right.
But okay, cool. So they come out and, you know, they do the announcement of the beginning of the Grand Ole Opry because it's a radio show. And then they bring Chris Young on the stage. And I didn't know who Chris Young was, but I was the only one in the stadium who did not know who Chris Young was. He is evidently a very like new, but to call him up and coming would be incorrect. He's a very popular new country star. And he played a couple of tunes and, you know, everybody applauded and he left. And then act number two was Emmylou Harris.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. And we're like, holy crap. Okay, wait a minute. You know, we're like 5 minutes into the show and Emmylou Harris is on stage. How do you like, it's got to go up from here. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so for Emmylou's second song, Trisha Yearwood walks on stage to sing harmonies with her. And we're like, okay, we definitely made the right decision. Like, this is going to be the show to see. And there we had some people seated next to us who were from the general Nashville area. They were about 20 minutes outside. And they were like, yeah, we love coming to shows in Nashville because you never know. And even at that point, they're like, okay, this is more than we ever would have expected. And then the third act was the lightning warning, and everybody had to clear the stadium. And that was the end of the show, it turned out.
Oh.
Yep.
We got to see Amy Lou.
I know. That's the thing. And we wound up having, the worst part was, you know, the three of us were comfortable being outside at a stadium show in Nashville. We were less prepared emotionally to be sort of sheltered indoors for an hour because it was lightning like crazy outside. And that's effectively how it worked out. We were sheltered inside before they officially announced that the show was canceled. We knew it was going to be canceled because we could see the radar map. It was like, well, there's going to be about a 90-minute window where there's no rain. And that's the window where they're going to let us go home, you know, because they got to do that safely. And then, I mean, the lightning outside was epic. We got back to our Airbnb and saw more lightning. We had this like, we were a corner unit with our Airbnb, just all windows. And it was amazing to watch the lightning come across Nashville. But so they did. They finally let us go. But, you know, the three of us were like hunkered in a corner with our masks on. Like, OK, someday it'll be safe for us to leave. And eventually it was. But yeah, then we went to the Bluebird and saw Songwriters Night there, which was a really nice little moment. You've been to the Bluebird, right? You've been there before?
I have.
Yeah.
I have. I did a dad-daughter trip with my youngest, and we had a great time. So, yep, the Bluebird, toured the Ryman, but just mostly walked down
Broadway.
Down the main drag. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, you're going to see seven bands in 15 minutes.
You can see seven bands in one bar. I mean,
right.
Yeah, no, we did. And we saw some great acts. It's a fascinating thing there to watch how that routine works. Right. And this was my second time to Nashville. I've certainly seen it before, but saw more of it this trip where the bands don't take breaks. The individual members will each take maybe a 10 minute break, you know, at maybe multiple times throughout their set, whatever they work out to themselves. But the music never stops. And the bands aren't, as I understand it. And of course, I was trying to sort of just get a picture of how people are paid there. And I'm sure there's different, you know, everybody's got a different deal, but it seemed like in general, the bands are paid by the clubs, but very, very little, maybe $50 a head or something for a 4 hour gig. Right. And, maybe. And the bulk of the money comes from that tip jar is how that works. And you know, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, if you are able to secure a gig on Broadway, you know, even at 11 o'clock in the morning on a Monday, there's a ton of people walking up and down the street. So these places do start to really fill up, and I'm sure you can do extremely well with the tip jar. If you figure out how to work it, which of course you do. I even saw one band transition to the next band without the music stopping. It was just like, okay, it went down to, I think finally it was like, you know, one of the singers of the first band with an acoustic guitar playing a couple of tunes while the new band finished sort of setting up behind him. And then it just transitioned over and ramped back up and away they went. But it's a grueling gig, man. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, but it was fun. And so, yeah, we wound up seeing that the only rain we had was that 4 hour period of the Garth show. And so we didn't get to see Garth. But the nice part is we get to tell each other, it's like Schrödinger's lineup, right? We will never know what the lineup was.
Right.
We get to tell each other, obviously Dolly was there, right? I mean, if you have Emmy Lou as number two, who's number 10? It's gotta be Dolly.
Right.
Right. Right. So that's what we tell ourselves. And you know, it's fine, but yeah, saw a lot of bands. Yeah.
Nashville is cool. And for anybody who doesn't know, I mean, it's the main kind of touristy drag downtown. Has about, what would you say, 50 bars?
Yeah, if you've ever been to Austin or seen Austin 6th Street, Nashville is like 6th Street, Broadway in Nashville is like 6th Street times, I would say it's about times three. I mean, it's a lot more people, a lot more bands playing. But
50 or 60 bars, music from 10 in the morning till 3 in the morning, I think.
I think that's right.
And sometimes, you know, some of these bars are multi-floors and there's different bands on each floor of the bar.
Many of them.
And as Dave said, a lot of them are like, you know, named after a famous country star whose license is named for the for the draw on the bar. So
and her name, Miranda Lambert, was the it was the first one to have a first female to have a bar named after her. Her bar is actually we were there twice. It's a really nice place, the nice rooftop kind of thing, and it's good.
Johnny Cash Museum, did you go by there?
No, we went to the Country Music Hall of Fame, which was cool. I'd done that before. I think I talked about it on the show after we did it a couple of years ago, but we did that again because our daughter hadn't seen it, and it was cool to do that again. I appreciated it. And
we did the backstage tour of the Ryman, which was just nice. Fascinating.
I've heard that's
great.
Cool
tour.
Yeah
So I mean, not only is the stuff you see, but the, you know, the kind of narrated tour of what happened in some of the dressing rooms and bathrooms. So it's great.
That's
highly
cool.
Recommended.
Okay. All right. I'll do that for my next trip down there. I took the opportunity while I was away, Paul, to send my, my in-ears, my UE11s, the Ultimate Ears UE11 Pros that I use all the time. I sent those in for my, what's called my annual service. It's probably once every 2 years that I send them in, once every 3 years, but they really do it right there. It's $99 and they just take care of everything and clean them out nice and replace the cable if you need to, which I did, and all that stuff. And I thought I had worked it out perfectly. I sent them in like right after I finished my weekend of gigs, you know, before we left, and I was away for long enough that I figured, oh, it's just going to work out perfect. I chose not to do the overnight shipping on the return because I'm like, oh, it's going to work out fine. Well, you know, shipping from Irvine, California to Durham, New Hampshire takes a little bit longer, exactly 1 day longer than I had calculated. And so I did a weekend where I didn't have my default go-to set of ears. I live a charmed life, though. I have plenty of spares. And so I wound up going back and using my Future Sonics in-ear monitors, I guess was the name of the product back then. I don't think it even had a model number. This is, you know, I'm going back 15 years to when I got these things. And, you know, Future Sonics is a different, they have a different outlook on things. They really come from the school of you only need one driver per ear, one true speaker, a dynamic driver, not balanced armature. So like my UE11s from Ultimate Ears have four balanced armatures in them with crossovers and all that stuff. Future Sonics is of the mindset that, you know, especially when they were building these, and I'm pretty sure that remains, that they, you know, one speaker per ear, one dynamic driver is all you need. And I always had a problem with them because they didn't have an ambient option, so I didn't have enough bleed in. But I wound up using them on airplanes to listen to music because it's super comfortable, they're custom fit, and they sound great. So I've had them, you know, for years and years, and I used them for this gig. And what has happened in the interim is I've basically stopped, especially with Bitter Pill, stopped using my ambient. I plugged up the ambient ports on my Ultimate Ears because there's enough mics on stage, and I have an overhead mic that I put on my drums every time. Even if we don't need it in the house, it's just easy enough. It's sort of part of the setup that I don't need the ambient option anymore. And so using these without needing an ambient option was like, oh wow, yeah, right, they sound really good. Like I it was like I had found something brand new. And so it was a fun little moment to go through. And you know, I've been a big fan and still am a big fan of the ambient option because it gives you as a performer a lot of flexibility in terms of what you can get away with at a gig. You know, if you wind up at a gig and they say, oh yeah, we're only putting vocals in the monitors, it's like, okay, well, I can still use my ears because I'm going to let some bleed through, and you take the plugs out of the ports and that sort of thing. So I mean, I still very much like it, but it was interesting. I suppose perhaps for the first time in 17 years, I properly experienced the Future Sonics monitors, and it was like, right, I get it now. They sounded great. It was really, really a nice full sound, plenty of high end, you know. So if you're ever worried about a single driver not being enough, Dave, the drummer, says that it certainly can be if that's how they're built to be used. You know, obviously, if you have a driver go blow out, that's a different thing. But yeah, the single driver was a nice little change. So, yep.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Fun. I have another thing to say about that same gig, but I think it's going to take a little longer. And the next thing that I want to do is talk about our sponsor, which is Bandzoogle. So I will start by telling you that if you go to bandzoogle.com, you get to try it for free for 30 days. And then if you use the promo code GIGGAB, G-I-G-G-A-B, you get 15% off your first year of any subscription. And the reason you want to go to bandzoogle.com and do all of that stuff is because this is the not only the best and not only the easiest, it's the easiest and the best place for your band to have your presence on the web, your electronic press kit for your music. They have all the features that you'd need for a professional website built in, including hosting a custom domain name if you want to do that. And I highly recommend you do that for your band so that you can just say that to people and then they know where to come. But they can host your custom domain name. In fact, they do it for lots of bands. They do it, I think, for the House Rockers. Is that right, Paul? Am I still right?
Absolutely.
About that? Yeah, there you go. They have all these customizable templates, so you don't need to be a nerd about web design. You just need to be a nerd about music so that you can make good music. But they take care of figuring out how to take this visual idea that they show you in a template with your tweaks, customizations, and changes and make it work as a website. And the good news is it's all sort of baked into these templates. So you just do make the changes and it magically happens. In addition to that, they've got all the tools to sell your merch and your music, all commission free. And their crowdfunding is commission free, too. They've got fan subscription features. Guess what? Commission free. They've got mailing list tools to help you grow your fan list and then send out newsletters. Of course, all the social media integrations and live support from their musician friendly team 7 days a week, because they know that's how we musicians are. So again, bandzoogle.com is where you want to go. Try it free for 30 days. And then promo code GIGGAB, all one word, G-I-G-G-A-B, gets you 15% off the first year of any subscription. Thank you so much to Bandzoogle for doing what they do and for sponsoring this episode. We really appreciate it.
House Rocker recommended.
House Rocker. There you go. Yeah, man. That's the best endorsement. That's the only endorsement you need. Yeah. So we played this gig, the gig that I used the my spare ears at. And I was the first one to get there. It was a private party. And this was with Bitter Pill. And, you know, Bitter Pill, from our side of the stage, I know everybody in the band. I know how the band came together. I know who we all are. And we're this kind of like hippie-ish, you know, there's a dark element to the music at times. Like it's kind of weird, right? But it's great songs, great songwriting. Obviously, everybody in the band can play, perform really well. But I would never think of Bitter Pill as like a family friendly band, but we definitely can be. And we are. And we also have, you know, our two front people, our father, daughter, right? Like, so we have this family aspect right at the front of our band. But it's always weird to me when, especially this year, I for some reason, I guess it's post COVID or something. I don't know. We are delivering what people want. And so we've had this huge influx of baby boomers that are really like coming to the gigs and knowing all the songs. It's not the only crowd that we have, but there is definitely a segment to this. And so I show up at this gig at this private party, and it's this house that, you know, belongs to these baby boomers. Their 30-year-old kids are there lounging by their really nice pool. And, you know, they had a bar set up, they had caterers there. And I was like, this feels like a wedding that I'd be doing with Uptown Celebration, not the, you know, little hippie band that I know is about to show up and play. And I was like, yeah, right. You sure this is us? I texted the guys. I'm like, are you sure that it was a contract to play and not a restraining order that they issued against us maybe? But they were totally into it. It was yet another moment where I, you know, the realization of our band comes across very different to the crowd than it does to me. And again, I mean, everybody in the band is a performer. We're all and very much so professionals, right? Like we definitely know how to tailor our show. Like that basement gig got a very different performance than the crowd at this, you know, family party in their backyard had. And that's totally fine. And we can play a lot of the same songs, but it's, you know, we're performing for the crowd that's there and catering to the crowd. And we picked up this gig because we've been doing a lot of, you know, outdoor sort of afternoon festival kind of gigs in all the towns around here. And that's, you know, a good way to kind of get yourself out there and get exposed to these things. Of course, we get paid for all of them, which is great. no reason to do gigs for free. But it's been really interesting. And it, you know, it, I had not, I guess the biggest thing is I had not seen that older crowd coming out to live music before, the live music that I was playing before this year. And and it's been interesting. I mean, there's the 45 plus crowd, but there's also the 60 plus crowd, right? And we're getting both of those, which is a new thing. And
do you think it's people have been cooped up in their houses for COVID?
I do. I think that's part of it for sure. I think people, you know, we all spent last summer trying desperately to figure out, you know, what we could do to entertain ourselves. And, you know, there was a common refrain, at least if you read social media, that everybody was like, well, next year I'm not sitting in my house all summer. Right. You know, whenever there's a thing happening, I'm going to go do the thing. Right. You know, all those things that we took for granted that would always happen. Obviously, they didn't happen last year. So, yeah, I think that's part of it. But I think this band sort of delivers a thing that crowd latches onto. It's not the crowd I would have expected. I understand why they're latching onto it, but it's like if you had asked me 6 months ago, all right, who do you think's going to be at your shows this summer? You know, it would not have even been close to, I would have been off the mark. You know, the people that I expected to be there are there, but then there's this whole other element, which is awesome. I mean, it's amazing, but it's really also interesting to watch, you know, but it's,
no,
it's
I get it.
Cool. Yeah.
I was, as you're saying that, I'm thinking when I started my band, so I was what? 37.
Yeah.
36. And trying to get neighbors and friends out to see me in the, you know, maybe once.
Yeah.
But not a regular thing. But over time, as, you know, my peer group, you know, kind of empty nested, definitely is now a thing. And now, they're really empty nested and approaching retirement.
Right.
And they've got a lot of time and they've got a lot of disposable income and, you know, going out for an evening just to get out of the house is a really viable thing. But I think it depends on the what. Like, again, you know, bars are a different gig.
Yeah, these people are not coming to bars. We don't play a lot of bars. We've just been playing a lot of looser, you know, I don't want to call them loose. I mean, they're very well organized. But, you know, festival gigs, these sorts of parties, certainly. We played the other night. We played. God, it was so hot, man. It was like 95 degrees. And we played on this concrete stage over in Lebanon. It was like a 2-hour ride to the gate, which was fine. We played. It was a great crowd. They're doing this whole festival, or they did a whole festival all weekend. We opened up the festival on Friday night. And I drove home 2 hours after breaking down, obviously. And I still wasn't like dry by the time I got home. And then we did the same thing the next day at a little closer to home, but you know, hot gigs, which is great, but it's these more, you know, I'll call them family friendly gigs. And there certainly are people coming with their kids to a lot of these, but there are also like you're describing the empty nester or even almost, you know, post empty nest, like the retirement, almost retirement crowd, if you will. Yeah. But it's weird because I never saw that retirement crowd coming to gigs. Now I realize that the retirement crowd is a different wave of people. They came up with live music in a way that, you know, the people before them did not. But the first time I experienced sort of the empty nester crowd en masse going out to see live music was when I came out to play with you. Like that was that. No, really, like what you have or had, or I'm sure you still have out in the Bay Area, you just don't live there anymore, was a really interesting thing. It like you had this community of, I mean, like thousands of these types of people that would come to these events all the time. Like your events that you were doing with in the town you lived in, Los Gatos, you had for people that don't know, they had these events every, I guess, Sunday night or something. And there would just be thousands of people in this park watching some random cover band play. Not like the bands were good, but it was just like, it wasn't any, there wasn't anything like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, it's Peter Frampton playing in our little park. We should go. It was just like, you know, whoever the band was, we know they're going to be good. They've been, you know, the same people who selected all of them. It's going to be fun and it's going to be great. And they would go out and they would party. And at the time I attributed it to your lax, open container laws, which allowed people to have like wine and beer and stuff like in the park, which you can't do around here. And of course you had, you know, effectively legal weed for a lot longer than anybody else has around here. But I think more of it's like the divorcee crowd. I like, they're thinking back on it, that there was a lot of that. 'Cause it was this like sexually charged thing of 45 plus people. I was like, this is weird.
let me break it down for you.
Yeah.
It is actually interesting. So
it is interesting.
That series in Los Gatos has actually been going on for 20 some odd years. We ran it. I ran it for, you know, a couple of years with Scott, you know, and, but there are 25 towns that have ones at least that big.
I know.
And then probably 20 more towns that have one some order of magnitude smaller.
We're talking about weekly gigs, right?
Pretty much in the summertime. And then, you know, there's the really vibrant art and wine festival scene on the weekends as well. So civic concert series is one thing. Art and wine festivals that almost all have music stages. And remember, I shared this with you. I'm having a little bit of culture shock down here because it's a fairly different scene than up there. So if I was to break down that scene up there, we'll take the Los Gatos concert series. Again, it has a long history. It has it's fairly affluent community.
Yeah.
That one was actually, if you really kind of walked it, there was a combination of like, this was a nice family activity or neighborhood activity, like whole neighborhoods would come down, circle their chairs around, you know, that type of thing. They were dance events largely when you went, although there in years past, the people who ran it, you know, they tried to do a cultural smorgasbord and had opera one time and, you know, mariachi music the next week and all that type of thing. So they took a different approach to it. Still great crowds.
Got it. Interesting. Right.
Not as big as the dance events, though. And the dance events definitely did have a social. I'm going to stay away from the sexually charged part of it. I'll just say social.
They were your neighbors, not mine. So I can say it. But it really was this, like, as I sort of walked through the crowd and it was like, wow, this just doesn't happen where, I mean, like I could look at any individual group of people, right? You know, and like you said, there were definitely families there and clearly large groups of people that were banded together. Now that you're telling me there were neighborhoods, it's like, right. That makes sense. Okay, cool. But, you know, and then of course, you know, some couples without kids and of varying ages and all that stuff. But it was like the fact that they were all there how many people lived in that town? 30 something thousand, maybe, right?
Yeah, 30,000.
And to have 5,000 of them at this event?
Well, people would come from other towns because it was a pretty good event. But again,
still, that's insane.
You know, and the funny thing about me hearing you say this is that I assume that's the way it is everywhere. Is that like, you know, anywhere where there's are nice parks and decent bands and, you know, nice people, you know, a nice Sunday afternoon in the park, having music is a good thing, or you know, in these art and wine festivals as a way to discover crafts and fairs and, you know, grab some interesting food off a food truck, you know, that type of thing, or local restaurants get together. I assume that that's everywhere.
Right. It's not, as I'm sure you're finding out. Well, but I think, I don't know, obviously, I'm certainly people around here get divorced. Certainly people in the San Francisco Bay Area get divorced. I don't know what the relative percentages are of those numbers, but thinking back on it all, I wonder if that, because it's, what the weirdest part to me was that there was this like, you know, 40/50 something crowd that was like really out to party with music like 20 somethings used to be. Right. And as I stop and think about it, it's like, wait, it's not like generally 20 somethings used to be. It's like those people when they were 20 somethings used to be. And it's like, as I think about it, I wonder if it's like, oh, wait a minute. Either, you know, they are still happily married, their kids are out of the house, and they just are doing the things that they used to like to do before they, you know, had to raise kids or chose to raise kids. I don't mean to make it a chore. It is a chore at times, but it's a wonderful chore. I regret none of it other than a few moments here and there. Little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. But, you know, it's how it goes. but you know, then there's also the people that are where the marriage didn't survive for a variety of reasons. And so now they are looking for companionship and a thing to do. And like that was the part to me that was really interesting. It was like, I wish I could get the 40/50 something crowd out, because like you said, they do. They have disposable income. They have time. They you know, but that's not the crowd that by and large goes to see live music around here or went to see live music around here. It feels like we are seeing a moment of opportunity where more people are leaving their houses and some of them are going to see live music. I'm sure that some of them are going to do many other things. And so if we can, you know, if we can sink our teeth into them and show them how great this is, we can keep this alive. But this is a moment of opportunity. It's not the new normal yet. I think.
But this kind of goes back to our fascinating to me discussion about what makes a scene.
Yeah, so, it is. You know, right. Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of magic secret sauce stuff that goes in. You need, you know, I think a certain base level of good product, good music, right?
I don't even know that that's important, but sure.
but definitely what you want is musicians who press the flesh and engender people to connect to the scene that is being created. And I've said this before, you know, I play, our band had that regular gig at that one club. I think on any one night, that was probably 50-50 people looking for love and people into music. Right. So on any one night is one thing. When I do the solo acoustic stuff, I really, you know, because it's not dance music and they're mellower types of nights, it's more the people who close their eyes and kind of like vibe with the music. And that to me is gold. But, you know, the scene takes all things. And then it takes, you know, a pretty good, you know, don't ever underestimate the looking for love crowd, right? That's the fuel that kind of makes, you know, bar scenes work and a lot of these types of scenes work. But, you know, there's more arms and legs. So, you know, if you want a vibrant music scene in your area, you need that. You need, you know, a supply of music. You need, you know, musicians who know how to, or are at least invested in growing the scene and getting a fan base, and you know, so they can kind of control their destiny. You need a group of people who want to go out. You need music lovers, right? So you know, I don't know if you know in rural Washington State,
you need
if you're going to find it something.
You need people who enjoy the energy of a live music event. That to me, that's different from music lovers, right? I mean, certainly some of them might be music lovers. But even as I'm at like a Phish show or something, I look around and there's people that are absolutely there for the music. Right. And then there are people that are there for the party. And when I sit on stage and look out at the crowd, I see the same thing. There are people who are there for the music and there are people who are there because there is a party happening around live music there. And both of those things are great. Like, I love that both of those things can happen. What was it? Steven Tyler. I was listening to an interview with him years and years ago, lead singer Aerosmith, for anybody who doesn't know, and also a fellow drummer. And he said, well, yeah, he says, our job is to go out and throw a party for 15,000 people every night.
Right.
That's
right.
Our job. I was like, look at that. He's not talking about, we got to go play the songs. We got to go do this. The umbrella says you're throwing a party for 15,000 people. Now, how are you going to go about that? Well, you got to break it down. A couple things you're going to do, but don't forget about the party. Yeah. Which opened my eyes. It was like, right. They're not obsessed with themselves. They aren't taking themselves too seriously. They understand what's happening in the room that they are in.
And they get to have fun doing what they love to do.
Also that. Right.
Facilitating that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You are, to whatever degree you're choosing to engage, you are creating an experience for people. You might be creating a mellow, you know, emotional experience. You might be creating a adrenaline filled, you know, booze filled experience, but you know, it's all these things that go to getting into someone's head and heart to get them to come in, you know, multiple times.
Yep.
And you know, the smartest successful groups at any level know this and harness the energy of it and make it work for them.
Yeah, they right. Exactly. That's exactly right. they know what's happening around them. That self-awareness extends in a great way. And
so, yeah. So I'm, this is a perfect pivot. Cause I told you I had a new venue that I played in, and that had some interesting things. And here's what I think happened. Down the street from this new venue, an existing venue started bringing in live music, good live music, for a happy hour, on nights when there were these street closure festival things where the town was already bringing in live music. They were just bringing in really good live music. And this venue became kind of the center of town. This other venue about, a couple hundred yards away was like, hey, I want a piece of that. It must be music. Let's add music. And so I got a call, and some other people I got a call, and I got a call for my own services and also to recommend other services saying, yeah, we want to add music.
Sure.
And
that's exciting. I mean, that's really cool. Yeah.
In premise. However,
there's a but. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. There were a couple of tells in the equation. So, you know, my premise is you cannot just slap music, even really good music, and expect it to, you know, just drive people to things. Yeah. There's a lot of things that go into it. Is it a nice place to see music? Is it, you know, are the drinks reasonably priced in your place? Is the food good? You know, all these types of things. But just to think that I'm going to add some well-known locally musicians and my fortunes are going to change, I think is a naive aspect of it, right? And so there were a couple tells. One was the pay was kind of low. So I negotiated, and then they said they were going to pay me what I wanted, even though some full bands were taking less than I was going to take as a single, which is a whole nother conversation that needs to be held up to the light. But then they said, you know, the owner says he'll pay you that, just bring a lot of people. And I was like, wait, hold on here. And I sent this long detailed thing saying, hey, listen, I will promote this like I do every other gig, and I want you to be successful. But if your assumption is that all the draw is on me, let's hold this here. They didn't respond. I checked back with them a couple of days later and said, hey, did you read what I sent you? It's really important, you know, that we're on the same page about this for both of our success's sake.
Yep.
And they were like, I'm just too busy. What did it say? And I said, well, what it said is the draw is not all on me. And you need to understand that, you know, I don't want there to be hard feelings if it doesn't go your way. Anyway, they're like, fine. They're not paying attention.
No.
And so I show up and do the gig, and the person who booked me, and I think what happened is that a bartender at this place said, I know a bunch of local musicians, and wanted to impress the owner, said, I know a bunch of local musicians. I can get them in here. You know, it's going to be awesome. I walked in, and that person was clearly off. Like I know this person, and it wasn't a comfortable hello. I'm like, all right, whatever. And then the second thing was, is like one of the other things that we negotiated is I said, you know, is it indoors or outdoors? And they said, well, what do you want? And I said, well, I'd like it to be outdoors. And they said, fine. I show up and they tried to put me indoors. So all of a sudden another major thing is getting weird. And then there's just kind of this tense vibe. The owner kind of hung with me for a little while and let me play outdoors. And, it was fine. It was really hot day outside. The whole town was dead. I brought in about 10 people.
Okay.
As a solo, right?
Okay.
And not a lot more than that came that day. Anyway, gig plays. Actually, because I was outdoors and I really wanted to give them the best I could and try and get as, I didn't take a break for 3 hours trying to pull anybody walking by the street.
Yeah.
Trying to pull them in, right? Yeah. You know, I was trying to give them a sincere effort to help them be successful. Anyway, I go to get paid at the end, and there's a weird vibe from the person who hired me, this bartender. And, you know, I'll be with you in a sec. Right. Mm. I'm like, oh, all right, hey, here we go. Anyway, they hand me the envelope. They know it's short.
Yeah.
And I said, that's not what we agreed to. And they said that's what all the owner can play. There was nobody here today. And I said, but that's not what we agreed to. And, person got fairly flustered. And how much was it again? They know because it was all.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah.
And I told them, they go, oh, and they go, okay, well, hold on. And so I go finish loading out and they come back and they give me the difference out of their pocket. And I said, I'm not comfortable with this. Why isn't your owner paying for it? And they said, well, it's not the owner's fault. It's my fault. I promised you the money. I said, but you told me the owner said they were going to pay the money. I'm not comfortable taking it from you. And they said, it's my fault. You know, go ahead and take it. So I did take it. Would you have taken it if that person guaranteed it to you?
I mean, you know, it's like that scenario where the waiter screws up your order and buys your dinner for you because they brought the wrong thing. And you know it's happening, but they don't really say it out loud. You know, in those instances, unless I had a major problem with the waiter, which is so rare.
I don't think this person actually asked the owner. I think this person said, you know, he'll bring in 300 people and it won't be an issue.
Yeah. So I mean, in those instances I overtip to cover the difference, right? You know, and go on my merry way. But if I was in your shoes, man, I don't know. You tried not to take it, which is definitely where I would have started with it. At some point, you know, somebody's going to take the money that's laying there on the table, right?
I asked another musician friend, they said that person made you the guarantee. Yeah. Why wouldn't you take it? Right.
Right. That's the thing is they made the guarantee. I like win-win scenarios, as I know you do. And we talk about it on the show all the time, how important it is for every gig to be what I call win-win-win, right? The house wins, the musician wins, and the crowd wins, and not necessarily in that order. And then everybody's happy and everybody wants it to happen again.
But this was lose, 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 lose.
Not only lose, lose.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And again, you know, lose, lose, lose to the point where it's a venue where 3 and 4 piece, 5 piece bands are taking $200.
No.
Yeah. So you know, that's the type of venue it's going to be, right? So anyway, I leave. I'm not cool with it, but I can tell this is not going to be a good situation. A couple of days, you know, I said, you know, clearly you can't afford me. You know, this wasn't good for everybody. Let's go ahead and cancel the other dates that I had. And, and it was fine. You know, that wasn't I think they were fine to not be on the hook for anyway. But then I come to find out that a friend of mine's group who I recommended got double booked for two of their gig they were double booked and they didn't get their gigs, and someone else got the same, you know, you got to bring a lot of people, and they were like, hey, you know, let's pause there. So anyway, the telltale signs of a bad gig were kind of ringing around this.
Yeah, well, I was cautiously optimistic. It's inexperienced management, right? Anybody that's run a business, and I consider every band a business, if you're getting paid, there is at some point, usually early in the evolution of your business, there is a moment of luck, right, that happens. And so it's entirely possible that this whole scenario could have gone away if lots of people in that area that afternoon were interested in seeing live music. Maybe the temperature was a little cooler, right? Like there's a scenario where that gig did have 300 people in there and it was amazing and the word got out. And that one lucky moment, a smart business owner is able to say, okay, why did this work? Let's replicate it as best we can. Let's identify and all that stuff. But also, you know, most business ventures fail. And the reason they fail is they have an unlucky moment at a time when they can't financially recover from an unlucky moment. It's just how it goes, right? And so as you're starting a business, look for that lucky moment, enjoy it, but don't assume that you're going to just have lots and lots of those. You got to take advantage of it. But so it sounds like that's what happened here is, and they, you know, they couldn't possibly have had enough experience to know how to do this right. They needed an opportunity to be shown how to do this right. And I mean, they made a mistake. Now I'm a big fan of learning from mistakes, but I don't know if they want to learn from this one. Is what it sounds like.
Well, I mean,
to me.
Pick your mistake. I think.
Oh, there were lots of mistakes. Again, yeah,
there were lots of mistakes. And actually, once that process of sliding the shorted envelope across the table, saying this is all we can pay you, that's kind of an unrecoverable mistake.
Did they tell you before they gave you the envelope that it was going to be light, or did they wait for you to figure it out?
Like I said, it was uncomfortable from the moment I walked in, slid the envelope across, you know, waited for my reaction to it. And
see, then they should have said, if I'm going to short somebody, they're going to know it well before I write them a check or hand them an envelope. I mean, not that I hope to ever have to short somebody, but like,
I was going to say,
yeah, but like, I mean, you got to own that before the other person figure, you're not going to let it, oh, will they sweep it under the rug? Like waiting for that shows.
Well, along with that was, there was nobody here. You didn't bring people right in. And I, like I said, I went to the effort before to say,
yeah,
hey, you know, like, this is my first time playing with you. I don't know if in a restaurant on a 1 to 4 on a hot Sunday after Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, if that's going to be a draw, you know, we're going to have to see how it is, you know, but yes, you know, the risk is yours. I'm providing a service, right? If 300 people came, you're not going to pay me extra. Right. So let's be honest about what this is. And so again, you're being somewhat deferential to the learning process that some venues have to have.
Well, no, this venue has to have a learning process. The question is,
will they own that fact?
Yeah. Right. And it doesn't sound like they want to. And I've seen that too. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily giving them an escape here, but it's like, you know, they need to, these things happen. It's normal. How do you recover from this? And it seems like they don't want to, which is,
it's not unforeseeable that if the stage was set correctly and there wasn't this air of weirdness when I walked in, and that's trying to put me inside when we agreed to outside, where when it was a real slow day, I don't know if they would have said, you know, they even could have set it up saying, listen, it's our first time. Can you give us a break on this or something like that? There's ways that they could have kind of cushioned the blow that got me on their side to say, yeah, you know, I would invest in it. And I'm trying to think of other venues where, because I know it's happened, where we've invested and built up. I mean, I guess to some extent, that venue where the House Rockers played the club gigs all those years. I mean, remember he originally offered me pretty low pay for a 10-piece band,
right,
for any band. And I said, hey, how about if we just take the door, let's make it a partnership. And he was like, yeah, cool. And we built it into something where everybody won. Right. And so there was an air of interest in finding a win there. Like, I'm open to that, but you know, you can't promise and then be weird about it and then try to make the musician feel bad about it.
Right.
And right. So this just had like, yes, you know, all the decisions that went into this make me think that this would happen again. And so, you know, we're not doing it. So anyway, at least three other musician friends of mine had their own, like one was double booked and one didn't like the heavy handed bring a crowd. And, you know, another just didn't like what happened to their friends. And three musicians said, this is probably not going to be right for me. Four, including me.
It sounds like they could. I mean, everybody can recover from a mistake. You know, that I always believe, because I've recovered from more than you could ever even possibly imagine. And I make more mistakes than I make right decisions even still. But they have to want to, and they have to, it just sounds like, this is something they thought would be an easy thing to add. Like, hey, if we put a TV in the corner, we can be a sports bar. Well,
right.
No, not necessarily. But again, you might get lucky that tonight, the day you put the TV in, is the day that there's some huge game and people pile in here and suddenly, you know, the stars aligned and your place was a sports bar for one night, you know, like that thing that can happen. And I've seen it with clubs, with bands. It's like, oh my gosh, this was amazing.
You can get lucky.
You can get lucky.
But then the stars can line up.
But then you have to like figure out why you were lucky and figure out how to replicate that luck. Like, okay, what do we do next time? So we don't have to get quite as lucky, right? Like, you know,
and I guess that's my message in all this is like, when you find a venue that just wants to slap music on thinking it's going to change their business fundamentally, no promotion, you know, not terribly good care for the musicians.
Right. Right.
You know, all these other things. These are indications it's probably not going to be a great gig. You may be able to make it a good gig. I'm not saying it's beyond possibility. And there's some, like I said, there's some 3 and 4 and 5 piece bands that have taken this gig. They're happy with it. They're happy to have a gig, I guess. And you know, it's the right fit for them to bring their people who are cool to have a, you know, a late afternoon lunch and, you know, that type of thing. Any place has the potential to be good, right?
Right.
But it needs a lot of things, you know, care and feeding and watering, you know, in order to make it good, as do most places. So I guess my message to anyone listening is, you know, have your eyes wide open when someone new says, hey, we want to add music. You know, think about it. Do they care about music? Or is this just just a new coat of paint to try and cover up a business that might not be doing well, right?
Right. You know,
or
something
like that.
Yeah. Or maybe they are doing well and they thought they could add, like, who knows? It's, you know, it's a million different things. But yeah, these are great. I think the best takeaway from this conversation for anybody is all the warning signs, right? Like, you know, when you see these things, the double bookings, the make sure you bring lots of people, it doesn't matter what you're telling us. It's just going to all work out. You know, the blind optimism without any history to support it. Like those things. And we don't know how to take care of the band kind of thing. Those are all those, to me, those are the litmus tests, right? Like if they don't know how to do these things, it means they haven't been doing them. And are they going to learn or are they not going to learn? And, you know, you can help people if they want to be helped in a scenario like this. But also you need to decide, okay, is that what you wanted? Is it worth your time? Like with that first place that you were playing with the House Rockers, it absolutely turned out to have been worth your time to go and do what you did, right? Like absolutely. And so, you know, great. That club didn't know what they were doing. You knew a little bit more about what they were doing, but even like still the tour, you were figuring out a bunch of different things, leveraging each other to do that. And that was cool. So, but if you,
I like that saying, when someone tells you who they are, believe them.
Yes. Yeah. There you go. Right. Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So my tale of woe for the week.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear it, man. It happens. And it happens. You've been doing this a long time. You've seen these warning signs before and you pushed past them and were like, we probably make it work. I mean, at some level, I don't think you own it the same level of culpability that the club does. But like you saw this coming very clearly, make sure you read my email before I step foot in that place. Like you knew that chances were it was going to end exactly like it ended. But every now and then we musicians need to prove this to ourselves. And so it's fine. You know, it's all good. So,
yep. And I'm trying to think, even if I would have brought, 50 people would have been, a slam dunk home run. 30 people probably would have been a very good day, good afternoon for them.
Yep.
And they might have smiled at the end and said, cool, let's keep doing this. And I would have been like, what do you mean, let's keep doing this? We have 2 more dates scheduled and you tried to put me inside and, keep musician friends, keep your eyes and ears open and, be discerning because, here's probably what happens is I took that money. I wouldn't doubt that the person who paid me that money said, can you believe Paul made me pay him that money?
Right.
Right. I mean, this is kind of the thinking of all the troubles that go on, like the same thinking that got us into this mess probably doesn't end there. Right.
Right. Right. Of course. No. It all. Yeah. It's crazy. It happens. And it's, it's all right. We move on. But
I got a show out of the deal.
We got 20 minutes out of it. Yeah. Look for the warning signs. It's good. Make sure you let us know what you think about any of this stuff. Have you experienced your local scene being the evolution of it? Is it different than the scenes that Paul and I have described? I'm sure it is. And we'd love to hear from you about what your scene is like. You can email us feedback@giggabpodcast.com. You can even record a voice memo and send it to us and we'll play it right here in the show. That's totally fun. Yeah, exactly. So feel free to do that.
I think that's actually I would encourage people to that. I mean, we've kind of softly asked, you know, what do people get paid in different areas? But it would be really interesting to get a voicemail. How can people leave that voice message?
Feedback at giggabpodcast.com. Just
record
a voice memo with your phone.
Send it to you.
That's right. That's the best way to do it. Yeah, because we could set up a phone number, but then you're going to have this really crummy quality recording because, you know, the phone is the plain old telephone system, the POTS system, is a 8K wide bandwidth when, you know, your phone is 24 bit usually. So you're good to go. I realized I mixed sample rate and bit size, but you know, give me that. I'm right here.
I just love that idea, that Dave, it'd be really fun to hear. I mean, I know we have listeners all over the world and certainly all over the country.
Yeah.
So it would be really fun to hear, you know, what is your cover band scene like? And, you know, what is your music scene like? And, you know, what kind of gigs are there and what kind of pay is there and anything that you want to share? I'd love to know what's happening in rural Michigan or, you know, in Nashville or in Southern Florida or Australia or wherever people are listening. Yeah, that, I think that would be interesting to everybody to kind of know.
Yeah.
Globally, where are we similar and where are we vastly different?
Yeah, so just record a voice memo, send it to feedback at giggabpodcast.com. Your phone will do it. It's magic.
Love it.
It's great.
Love it.
Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. We look forward to seeing you next week. Yeah. Take it easy.
Always be performing.
That's it. Even when you know it's not going to end well.